Welcome to the Touring for Purpose podcast. This is our second episode inside of 2017. I'm glad you guys are with us. For those listening here through our iTunes podcast, we are so excited for the conversation today as I introduce my good friend, my longtime rudder through all of life's garbage and potentialities. Ted Vaughn is somebody who entered into my sphere nearly, I want to say maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Ted has done an amazing job of aligning himself next to both seasoned leaders as a navigator, but also a lot of young novice leaders as kind of an advocate. I would say that's the best word that I would describe you as. You've been an advocate for me in several places where I didn't have a voice. You were able to speak on my behalf. Somebody who has a natural ability to trust. You have guts in ways that other people, I think, they wouldn't be so confident to pull the trigger. That might be experience. That might be sheer stupidity. But for whatever reason, you've always seemed to fall forward. A common theme that celebrate often as we talk. So
thanks.
Today's conversation is going to be about managing tension as leaders. And the tension we experience as we ourselves are becoming the best version of ourselves through each season we find ourselves in, but also as a church, this is a purpose-driven podcast. It's aimed at emerging leaders and seasoned leaders in ministry. So churches at large deal with tension. And so Ted, why don't you give us just a snapshot of how you arrived in the season that you're in? You have your hands in several buckets, but why would you, you don't have to sell yourself, but you've got a reason for speaking on this topic, and it's because you see so many cases.
Yeah, so spent 25 years in full-time church ministry, had a chance to do a little consulting for the Presbyterian denomination for a season, then came to The Rock. I think The Rock was like boot camp for everything I'm doing today.
They have something called boot camp. Oh, they used to. They used to have something called boot camp. Remember that?
That's right, the Army.
Yeah.
So The Rock was an incredible experience. Loved every minute of it. It was the height of ministry and also the depth of just personal crisis and challenge for me.
Yeah.
It was at The Rock that I met guys like you and so many others who have been so critical in my life even today. So today, working with young leaders through Slingshot Group, through CDF Capital, and through Historic Agency.
You're super sponsored up.
Dude, like, it's crazy. You know, I didn't know I was, this is a great example of tension. I would have never said I was an entrepreneur until I became one.
You would have never claimed it.
Would have never claimed it. Everybody around me would have said, oh, I'm pretty sure
he's got some bones in him, some entrepreneurial bones.
So today, to get to do ministry, to get to help build God's kingdom and to do it through an entrepreneurial lens. It's a great season.
That's super cool. I want to say hi to some people who signed on. We got Luther Vaughn. Hanging out.
I know Luther.
And then Nick Moultrie is in. Jim Stamps is in the conversation. We've got a lot of people listening in.
That's fantastic.
So you've got a lot of people probably wanting to hear what you're up to and what you're doing.
Yeah, okay.
So you've been navigating several organizations through becoming better versions of themselves. Yep. While you address the organization, we always know that behind every great organization are great people.
Yep.
And so you have to tackle two together.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
What would you say, the reason why we're talking about tension, I'm guessing, is because it's something that's not being, it's not being navigated well. People are experiencing a sense of stress or they're getting a picture of a foreseeable future and what they do between the vision of what could be and where they want to be.
Yeah.
They're not navigating it super well.
Yeah. I mean, I think as a general theme for leadership and for really as a theological idea, tension is where God shows up and speaks most, I believe, profoundly. Agreement and obvious roads, I believe, are very infrequent and also at times dangerous.
You said agreement and obvious roads are infrequent. Like, that's not a normal
case.
But
I think if you ask your average senior pastor, they're more often than not looking for obvious roads of clarity with lots and lots of agreement.
Huh.
I don't know that we in the church, in seminary, in our training, do a good job of equipping people to navigate tension, to find God in places of tension. I think we want, the whole concept of denominationalism was rooted in agreement.
Hmm.
Oh, this Lutheran group over here believed differently about baptism or about, you know, the nature of Christ. Therefore, they must split off and start their own Lutheran denomination. Presbyterianism has multiple denominations within Presbyterian.
Did that come, you think, in a healthy expression of tension? Because when I look at denominationalism, sometimes I wonder if it's doing more damage than it's doing good. And you and I might not be able to agree.
Well, I think it's like unions. Denominations played a role. You go back to a season where the modern mindset was hardwired around intellectual agreement, around believing correctly, around thinking rightly.
Okay.
It was not about belonging. It wasn't about being together. It was about believing rightly. And as a result, anytime somebody had a different thought in terms of belief or conviction, it required a whole new split.
But that was the expression of it. For before that, it's the ultimate tension, right?
Yeah.
Because if you and I find ourselves at odds, even if it doesn't, you know, it may not crease our friendship, but if we have if there's something that we don't see eye to eye on,
sure,
that tension all of a sudden begins. It starts.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that most tension is happening intergenerationally.
Yeah. I mean, one of the, I would say both for the church and for the leaders in the church, one of the most, one of the saddest themes I see in most of the churches I work with, and I hate to start on a negative note.
No, but you know what we'll do is we'll take it from
there.
There
you go.
So,
I love it.
Yeah.
A lot of leaders that are 30 and younger are in a place of extreme frustration because they have ideas that are oftentimes challenging the current ideas. They have these prophetic ideas. They have great visions for what could be. They're risk takers. They're innovators. They want to blow up the existing system and rebuild it in some new way. And I believe within those leaders lay the future of the church for the next 100 years.
Hmm.
I don't think the existing model of church will be what we're doing 100 years from now. As a matter of fact, I know it's not. Maybe not even 50. But I do think building upon the theological and the existing foundation of the Bride of Christ, young leaders will innovate and take the kingdom of God to places it currently does not reside. But it won't help today's church if those young leaders are continually separated out, not brought into the fold. And, you know, it's difficult because young leaders tend to not be the most diplomatic, tend to not have the best, most seasoned approach to their critique, to their concerns, to their passion. And, you know, typically I think the older generation are really busy doing 52 Sundays a year, doing ministry, keeping the ship afloat.
Yeah.
So the tension becomes, how do I, as a young leader, voice what I want in a way that helps the church win today, doesn't lead to my being marginalized, and also leads to my own fulfillment and joy.
Let's use our relationship as an example of that, since it's something that we know. We know firsthand. There was a perfect example where, I as a young leader, I had a sense of the way things could be, not the way things should be, right? Because I don't think I had enough experience to say, this is how it should be. But I definitely envision...
Well, I don't think any leader ever knows what it should be. Great leaders navigate uncertainty.
So they know how to chart through uncertainty.
Yeah. But God, if you look throughout Scripture, God calls people to lean into... He invites them into places of uncertainty.
That's great.
Now, there's certainty in terms of God winning.
And you have certainty in who you are leaning on through the uncertainty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. Just for all of our like deep-seated Jesus people, keep it gospel-centered, you got yours, okay? But the reality is that things are never in perfect alignment ever.
God never shows A to Z. because we would, I think, in our humanness, screw it up. He invites us to take a step towards B, and then he shows us C after we've done that.
I was thinking of, this makes me sound super bougie, but I was on a sailboat about a year ago, and I don't sail. So I was surprised at the constant lean that we were always in. If we were catching the wind, essentially the fuel, it required us to be at a lean. And so for me, not used to the way sailing operates, it was super uncomfortable for me to always be kind of at a, you know, 15 to 25 degree angle constantly going, do we ever like straighten out? Does this thing ever like ride perfectly vertical? And I love the guy who was sailing the boat. He goes, if you're vertical, you're missing the wind.
Yeah.
And like, there was something so keen about that. It was as if they were used to the fact that there's always a sense of working with the elements. So there's a transferable truth in that, that there are always elements that we have to navigate. It's never going to be crystal clear, smooth waters. And so would you say that it's the person who's able to play the chord, right, in its tension that will find himself succeeding or superseding past his peers?
I think that's absolutely true for a few reasons. One, the pace of change is requiring today's leader to lean into tension and uncertainty and innovation like never before. You know, a good friend of mine, Houston Clark, often says you could take a church that was built in 1901, cut and paste that church and put it in 1961, and it would probably still, for the most part, suffice. If you took a church even built, or a building even built 10, 12 years ago, and tried to move it into today's, it wouldn't work. Right? The pace of change, technology, innovation. Yeah. And the same is true for leadership dynamics. So I think those leaders who are comfortable in tension understand that they're navigating uncertainty, that embrace God in places of not complete agreement, are comfortable in disagreement. I think they have an advantage just in the context of today.
How were you and how are you in your season of leadership inside of the local church? How are you so comfortable watching young leaders not pass you per se, because they weren't out experiencing you, but there were lanes by which you would propel people way past your experience going, I trust you, go figure it out. How did you do that as a leader? And what were you looking for in a leader that you were giving that kind of permission to? I'm certain that we have a listening audience that wants to know, how do I gain the trust of my supervisor in order to be given permission to go do these dreams, ideas?
So when I came to The Rock, which is the best example since that's
that was our ministry context.
So I think the answer for me, when I came to The Rock, I was at a season and an age and a stage where I realized my contribution is not what I'm able to create with my hands or even with my mind. It's the ability for me to shepherd, mentor, develop, equip, and propel those people that God brings under my purview.
Yeah.
I think if I had come to The Rock 5 years sooner, that wouldn't have been the case. I probably would have been trying too hard to be something, that to prove myself.
To push, to materialize those things.
Yeah, yeah. And part of why I was attracted to The Rock was because I was asked to come into a place where the culture around worship arts, technology, creative was very broken, very damaged. And I knew if there's one thing I am passionate about, it's healthy culture, equipping and developing healthy leaders. So for me, I came into The Rock ready to identify, equip, and mobilize leaders. Now, I don't think that you have to wait till you're 40 to do that, or 35 or 25. I think any leader, no matter how young, should be doing that today.
It's EQ, as you're saying.
Dude.
EQ is everything.
Yes. I think day one in the church, the question is, who are the people around me that I should be equipping, pouring into, and setting up for more?
That's good. I know that you could apply that in a tech department. You could apply that as a web developer. You could apply that as a high school pastor, as an executive pastor. That principle cuts across all paradigms. I remember one of the things that you did that was such a line in the sand as our leader. You wrote a manifesto. Do you remember this?
I do.
Tell me why a manifesto is so important inside of an organization, either a specific department or maybe as an, maybe there's entrepreneurs listening in and they go, why a manifesto? Why would I pen the thing that my heart is wrestling with?
So I think by nature of a manifesto, it's meant to be a real live document for a season that binds a group of people together and says, this is what we're holding on to. It's not meant to be this, the Ten Commandments set in stone that last, right? So we were in a season where the culture was changing rapidly. There was lots of shifting happening. And as a group, as a team, as a department, we needed something that became our playbook. I mean, I think The Rock corporate had some of that.
Yeah.
But I felt
we had our vision. We have vision and we had our our purpose statement. I think every church has one on the wall somewhere.
But we were a unique group of creatives. And I would say as a general theme, creatives often play by a different rule book that has to be better articulated for them.
That's good.
Or they're gonna get lost in the larger corporate deal.
Do you think that there are more millennials coming to the surface who just self-identify as creative, or do you think that there's still a distinct line between people who are like, I don't really express as much as, you know, my neighbor or my fellow 22-year-old?
I think that the millennials, and this is probably true beyond millennials, but millennials especially value creation. They're creators. Whether they're creative or not, I don't know that there's a higher proportion of creative people.
Yeah.
But in terms of value in creation, of appreciating something custom, I mean, look at what's happened in society contextually, right? My parents grew up in a day where the bigger, the more valid. Costco, Price Club, McDonald's.
Right.
The idea of so many million or billions.
Size equaled significance.
Yeah, or just or validity, right? Yeah. Today, it's boutique. Custom, small is
craft.
The new big, craft, micro, right? Mm-hmm. I think to some extent we've seen a massive shift, and the idea of being a creator or of creating is just a part of today's. I would say the same thing with excellence and authenticity. So again, my parents' parents grew up in a day in the church where excellence mattered way more.
That was the benchmark. We want
for
excellence.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if anything, vulnerability and authenticity wasn't trusted, right? Mm. The pastors wore robes. There were chancels. There was distance.
I don't even know what a chancel is.
Do you? So there was just a lot.
Do I wear a chancel or does that live on the stage? Literally, what is a chancel?
I don't even know if I'm going to explain it right. But the bottom line was, it was a lot of like hardwood and tile.
I pray that I never have to wear a chancel in my life.
That would be fantastic if you did.
But they saw that as representative of excellence.
They saw that as, this is our pastor. We trust what he says, but he did not feel like vulnerability or authenticity was important. If anything, that would feel like it was narcissistic or self promoting. Mm. It was not the value it is today. Today, I believe millennials define excellence only in as so far as it fits in an authentic package.
Yeah.
They would, you know, you look at the music, look at the expression of church. I would say for the most part, and this is introducing a lot of tension into the worship culture of churches, authenticity and transparency, vulnerability, being genuine, way more important than the quality of your guitar playing, your voice, or your band, or whatever else. Now, excellence matters. It's not to say excellence doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't take the back seat, but
excellence
without shifting.
Totally. Excellence without authenticity breeds distrust.
It reminds me of, what is that saying? It's hustle outpaces, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work, or something like that. Does that make sense? Like,
no.
Oh gosh, I just totally, I ruined it for everybody.
Sorry, say it again.
Hustle beats talent when talent doesn't hustle.
Yeah.
That's the saying. And that kind of, it's like one, like if you've got excellence, but you're not authentic, it really doesn't matter how good you can sing. I want to know, and this is me speaking as a 34-year-old on the cusp between Gen X and millennial, technically millennial, but whatever, I'm on the older end of it. I'd rather know somebody's wrestling with their week and bringing it to the stage and singing through a song in that light than just going, wow, that person just dominated that song.
And listen, I talk about this often at like keynotes or at workshops, and I'll have 60-year-olds who say, I feel that way as well. And I don't know that this is limited to millennials, but I think millennials have brought it to the forefront in a way that their parents and their parents' parents didn't value it at the same level. Mm. And I think, you know, well, I'm sorry, keep going.
No, well, no, I like where you're going with it. Right. My question is, okay, so now as an individual, because we started generic, right, with the larger organization, who are you seeing burn out and fall out, and what are the like common denominators between them? Who needs to work on it better? I know it's a two-way street, but is it the generation at hand that's...
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I do, yeah, yeah. A couple thoughts. I think, in my opinion, putting the burden on the young leader to somehow rise above their age, maturity, and experience and build a bridge to the older generation in a way that helps them hear, understand, and appreciate their perspective is unrealistic. The burden of, I believe, the young leader tension is on the mature leader to build the bridge, to help create a sandbox, a place like we did at The Rock, right? Yeah. You had a place to play and in the process mature and to add incredible value to God's kingdom. Because what you guys did was significant. Now, it needed to be refined,
totally,
understood,
and polished,
measured,
and
protected.
Proposed correctly.
But there's no way I could have done that or anybody else could have done that. That was something that you and Danny and others were uniquely gifted and passionate about doing. My job was to figure out how you do it safely, well, and in a way that adds value to the kingdom.
Yeah.
And The Rock.
And for our listening audience, what we did, quote unquote, was really try to imagine a ministry that had yet to exist. So we took our young adult efforts beyond the real estate four walls of the church proper. We launched a downtown venue and invited young business owners to partake. That became our ministry, and that also became our expression of ministry.
And it involved leasing, it involved liability, it involved Red Bull. I mean, there are so many.
Rough. I felt bad.
So many places of innovation and risk. But I mean, again, I at my age and stage, I'm not going to come up with that.
Yeah.
My job is to find out who God's moving in and equip and empower and create a sandbox. Now, was it easy? Are there places of tension?
And did you get yelled at?
For sure. But you know, I believe the burden is on the mature leader to build the bridge to the young leader.
That's
now,
a great call. I just want to sit on that. Like,
okay.
It's well, because I think a lot of young leaders are trying to figure out how to speak the language of the person that's beyond them.
Here's the thing. I'm 45.
Okay.
Am I 45?
Are you?
46. I'm something Luther Vaughn would know. Whatever age I am officially now an older leader. I'm no longer.
I have more gray hair than you do.
That's true, but you're like a silver fox.
Yeah, I am. I'm Hispanic.
I feel like I can speak to older leaders with a little bit more authority. For most of my career, I have felt like the young leader being irritating.
And trying to make noise and push on the ceiling.
But now I feel like I've earned the right to say, as an older leader.
Luther confirmed 46.
Thank you. As an older leader, you've got to build a bridge to the young leaders. Now, younger leaders.
Now, here we go. Young leaders
this
listening.
There's a great technique I learned from a mentor of mine named Rodney Jackson. And Rodney taught me the technique of inquiry versus advocacy. Inquiry is asking questions.
Okay.
Advocacy is advocating your opinion, stating your belief.
Okay.
I would humbly ask more young leaders, or really leaders of any age, but especially young leaders, to ask more questions to understand before they start advocating their critique, their belief, their conviction. I think too often we advocate and we push.
We're selling.
We don't inquire.
That's good.
I think we earn more trust, we build more chips, especially with senior leaders, when we're in the process of asking questions to understand and then earning the right to advocate our position, especially if it's a critical position of the existing model. Hmm. Ask questions that perhaps help your audience understand the gaps before you ever have to say them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, it's never perfect, and I don't know any young leader or really old leader for that matter who
seasoned. We call them seasoned leaders.
Sorry,
here.
Seasoned.
Yeah.
But I think if all of us were in the habit of asking more questions to understand and discover before advocating, when we do advocate, it would be received and better heard.
If you guys liked what you listened to through the beginning of part one of Ted's podcast, he's got a part two that's going to come out in just a few days. Make sure you check that episode out. It's the conclusion of this conversation. Again, like and subscribe and share this podcast with your friends through your channels, and we'll catch you on the next episode.